ho! I'm home, Mrs. Claus!
Santa! What are you doing home so early?
It's 5 o'clock. Quitting time!
But this is your busy season. Why, I've seen you work around the clock for weeks getting all the toys ready for the girls and boys.
Clara, maybe I'm getting a bit too old for this gig. I've been doing this Christmas thing for what? 1,500 years? For once, I'd just like to come home from work, knock back a few eggnogs, settle into the Barker Lounger, and listen to some old radio.
Oh, you know very well. We barely get a radio signal when the weather's clear. And with that snowstorm whipping up outside, I guess we're out of luck.
Wait a minute. That gives me an idea. Max? Hey, Max, are you there?
Yeah, boss. What is it?
Where's Rudolph?
I think he's playing reindeer games in the lounge.
Can you bring him over to the house?
I'm kind of busy here. It's almost Christmas, and the workshop's on triple overtime, in case you hadn't noticed.
I need you to get Rudolph up onto the roof, Max.
In this storm?
Oh, he's used to this weather.
Sure. Whatever you say, boss.
There. We'll have a cozy night by the radio. Why don't you whip us up a couple of your special eggnogs? You know the ones.
All right, but just for an hour or so, and then it's back to work for you.
Sure, sure. Mustn't let the little kiddies down. Oh, he must be up there. I think I hear something. Max, tell Rudolph to move over to the left about 3 feet.
Okay, boss.
Well, I'd like that 60,000 dealers and service stations.
That's it! We've got it!
Here's your eggnog, dear.
Was the night before Christmas, and in Santa Claus' sleigh, the electrical system was plenty okay. The ignition was perfect. Worked like a dream, and the sleigh ran so smooth, it made Santa beam.
What was Santa's secret, Harlow?
I heard him exclaim as he drove out of sight, "It's no secret at all, it's just Autolite."
Oh, Harlow.
You see, Hap, with all the kids in the world depending on old Saint Nick Christmas Eve, he plays safe by replacing old or worn-out parts in his Autolite-equipped car, sleigh, with Autolite original factory parts, all famous for their Autolite ignition-engineered dependability. Santa does it. Why don't you?
Harlow, let's switch from Santa to suspense.
Suspense. Autolite and its 60,000 dealers and service stations bring you radio's outstanding theater of thrills, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Hey! Oh, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the
Herbert!
Way. Yes, my dear.
What on earth are you doing down here in the cellar?
Why, just doing a little digging.
And why, may I ask, have you chosen this day of all days to dig up the cellar floor?
Well, I thought as the weather has been so damp, this would be a good time to plant that little devil's garden I told you about.
Devil's garden? Whatever nonsense is that?
That was my little joke about it. You see, I've managed to get hold of the spores of several unclassified wild orchids. In their wild state, they bloom under damp masses of leaf mold. The Araucanian Indians call them devil flowers because they appear to bloom under the ground.
Well, I am sure the Araucanian Indians will be very interested if you succeed in growing these ridiculous flowers under the cellar floor. Whom else it will interest, I can't imagine. Oh, what is that terrible smell? smell?
Oh, that's the leaf mold. Chemically identical with the earth blanket they grow under in the wild state. I suppose I should line the pit with concrete so as to prevent seepage from this foreign soil. But I don't suppose there will be much time for it now. And I do want to get these started before we close the house.
There certainly will not be time for it. Do you realize that we're sailing for America a week from today? And you've made no arrangements whatsoever. Unless you call digging a hole in the cellar making arrangements. I don't. Devil's garden, indeed. Sometimes I think you're going soft in the head, Herbert.
I suppose it's inconsiderate of me. You see, I've been wanting to try this experiment for a long time, but what with my lectures and seminars at the university, there never seemed to be time.
Well, there certainly isn't time for it now. I suppose you've forgotten I made an appointment for you at the barber's this afternoon.
Oh, must I shave my beard off, Hermione?
Oh, I thought we'd been all through that. Of course you must. They don't wear beards in America. Go get your jacket on and do as I tell you.
Yes, Hermione.
And don't forget to take your umbrella. It looks like rain.
Yes, Hermione.
And don't look so put upon, Herbert. Someone has to plan things in this house, or you'd never even get to the university on time for your lectures, much less make arrangements for a trip to America.
I know, but what about my specimens?
Oh, there'll be plenty of time to plant your precious devil's garden when we get home from America. We're not going to be gone forever, you know. We'll be back here for Christmas.
Yes, of course. Back for Christmas. I'd forgotten.
Well, try to remember it, and if you can't do that, just do as I tell you. I've been managing the plans in this house for 20 years, and if there's any digging to be done, I'll manage that as well. Do you understand, Herbert?
Yes, Hermione.
Good. You have just 20 minutes to clean up the mess down here and keep your appointment at the barber's. When you finish there, I want you to come straight home.
I wanted to stop at Miss Markham's and pick up some books I ordered.
Oh, all right. But don't loiter there the whole afternoon grousing over those old books the way you usually do. Now hurry and clear up this rubbish. Oh, and get rid of that smelly stuff. And no more digging, mind you.
Yes, Hermione. Yes, Hermione. How many years has it been since I've been saying that? 10 years? 15? 20? Clear up the rubbish. Yes, Hermione. Don't forget your umbrella. Yes, Hermione. Do this. Do that. Yes, Hermione. Yes, yes! How much longer can I stand this?
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Miss Markham.
Why, it is Professor Carpenter, isn't it?
Oh, you like me better this way?
You look ever so much younger without the beard. 20 years, at least.
20 years.
You'll be glad to know those books you ordered have finally arrived.
Books?
Phytotomy of phalloid gametophytes and coniferous shrubs of North America. Those are the ones you ordered, aren't they?
Yes, thank you. You're very kind, Miss Markham.
Why kind, Professor Carpenter?
Well, not many young ladies in bookshops would go out of their way to look up rare books for an old professor of botany.
Why, you're not old, Professor Carpenter. Really, you look... And besides, I adore botany. It's my particular hobby.
Oh, really? You never told me that before, Miss Markham.
I was afraid to. You were so imposing with the beard and all.
You might be interested in some specimen of alpine polyanths that were just sent to me by a friend in Switzerland.
Switzerland? I used to go there always for my holidays before the war.
You love Switzerland?
Every part of it. The lakes, the mountains, the beautiful spring flowers, especially the flowers.
It seems we have a lot in common, Miss Markham. I'm sorry we haven't talked before.
I am too. It was all the fault of the beard, it seems.
Oh, Miss Markham, forgive me if this sounds foolish, but I feel that shaving off my beard is the most important thing I've done for 20 years.
Oh, it is. I'm sure it is. I'm ashamed that I've been so distant with you all this time. Oh, there were times when I almost spoke up. Times when you came in here tired after a day with your students at the university. You seemed so alone, the way I'm alone in the world. I'd like to have asked you to stay a while and talk with me, but some way or other I wound up giving you your change and letting you go on your way.
You say you're all alone in the world?
Since my father died.
Did you never think of marrying?
My father was a very remarkable man. I never found anyone who seemed to measure up to what he led me to expect of men. Then the war came.
Miss Markham.
It's been so long since anyone called me by my first name. I'd like you to, if you want to. It's Marion.
Marion?
And yours?
Herbert.
How long have you been alone, Herbert?
Alone?
I knew you were a widower, of course, the first time I saw you.
A widower?
Oh, I can always tell. There's a certain sadness in a man's eyes. A sweet sadness. I think when he has been married and then...
A widower? I never thought of it in quite that way.
Perhaps I shouldn't be talking like this. But I've often wondered what she must have been like. Your wife, I mean.
Hermione? Not an easy woman to forget. Very strong. Always managing things. The house, my wardrobe, my friends. When we dined at a restaurant, she even ordered my food. She was always managing things. You might say she managed herself to death.
Poor woman. She must have loved you very much, but she needn't have put herself out so. It's plain to see you don't need things managed for you. You need companionship, I think, someone sympathetic with your work. But the last thing on earth you need is a manager.
How well you put it. The last thing on earth. That's the first time I thought of it, of course. And suddenly a whole new world opened up before my eyes. Marion and America. And no more of Hermione's planning my life for me. By the time I got home, my mind was working overtime.
Well, at last. You certainly took long enough about it. What are you looking so pleased about?
I don't know. Getting rid of the beard, perhaps. I feel 20 years younger.
You look even smaller. Your face looks triangular or something, and I'd forgotten how weak your chin was. But never mind, you can grow it back soon enough, after Christmas. Where are you going?
Down in the cellar. I just bought this electric lantern, and I thought I'd put it away down there.
Now, whatever possessed you to buy a thing like that?
I don't know. I rather liked this lantern. It might come in handy. Who knows?
Now, Herbert, don't start digging down there again. I've 100 things to do putting the house in order before we leave. I want you to carry these boxes upstairs for me.
Yes, Hermione.
And if you're going down to the cellar, take this along and stuff it into the furnace.
But this is my old bathrobe. I may need it.
Nonsense! I've bought you a new one. Oh, get rid of it. And don't start puttering down there with that devil's garden or whatever you call it.
I'm through digging, my dear. I think the pit is quite deep enough now. For my devil's garden. It would all have to be carefully planned, of course. Just as carefully planned as Hermione was planning the trip to America. We both went about our arrangements as the days passed. I spent all the time I could with Marion, and finally, she consented. And then it was the last day, the big day. The day we were to sail for America.
Operator! Operator! Are you there? Well, I'm still waiting on the call to Salisbury. Oh, well, put them on, quickly. Hello? Is this Paul Holt and Sons? Oh, it's Mrs. Herbert Carpenter. Did you receive my letter? Oh, good. Now, remember, we'll be back for Christmas, and I want the job done without fail. Oh, what's that? No, I'm sure he doesn't expect anything. Oh, send the bill to me in New York as I instructed you. Addressed in my name, of course. Oh, yes, I've already put them in the mail. You'll get them tomorrow. Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you so much. Oh, Herbert, where have you been?
Backstairs. I dismissed the servants.
Dismissed the servants? But I've asked some friends of mine luncheon. Oh, go and tell them it's a mistake.
Oh, I'm afraid it's too late now. They've packed and gone.
Oh, you have messed things up properly. Now, how many times have I told you to leave things to me? I make the plans around here.
Yes, Hermione.
Oh, you'll have to do better than this when I plan the trip home, or we'll never in the world be back for Christmas.
Back for Christmas. Back for Christmas. But you keep saying that.
Why not? We are coming back for Christmas, aren't we?
Supposing I were offered a professorship in one of those wealthy American universities.
Oh, nonsense. Americans care nothing for botany.
Well, they asked me to lecture. That means something.
Of course they asked you to lecture. Americans will pay to hear any foreigner deliver a lecture once. Now, there's no use getting yourself in a state about this, Herbert. No doubt this extra money will come in handy when we arrive
back for Christmas.
Precisely. And it's no good you're making a joke of it. Heaven knows where you'd be today if I hadn't got a sense of time.
Yes, my dear Hermione.
And as you've been so foolish as to dismiss the servants, you may empty the ashtrays and straighten up this room while we're waiting for the guests to arrive. I'm going upstairs to change. Call me when they get here.
Yes, Hermione. Yes, Hermione. Yes, Hermione, for 20 years! Hermione, always so right. Thought of everything. Well, not quite everything. There. Running her bath now. Safe to call Marion. If Marion were to change her mind now, after all, we haven't known each other for very long for this sort of thing, if she had any idea that I was not a widower yet. Marion, it's Herbert, my darling. No, nothing's wrong. No, my plans are the same, unless you've changed. No, we'll meet in New York and be married there. I'll explain why later. You'll just have to trust me. Yes, my darling.
Herbert!
I'm sorry, I can't talk any longer. Yes, I'll meet you in New York without fail. Until then, my darling.
Oh, Herbert, were you talking on the phone just now?
Yes, Hermione.
Whoever was it?
Freddie. Freddie Sinclair.
Didn't I hear you say something about meeting somebody in New York?
Why, but yes, old Freddie said he might possibly get over there before we leave. And I said of course we'd meet him there if he did decide to go.
Well, that seems very peculiar. But then all your friends are peculiar.
Yes, Hermione.
And just look at your jacket. Have you been digging in that cellar again?
Yes, Hermione.
Well, there's no need for it. You can't possibly get that devil's garden thing finished. Go and change your clothes before the guests arrive.
Yes, Hermione.
Oh, never mind. I see somebody coming up the walk now. Go and let them in.
Yes, Hermione.
Herbert?
Yes, my dear?
Look out the window. There's Professor and Mrs. Goodenough. Who's that with them? Precisely. Freddie Sinclair. Peculiar, you should have been talking to him on the phone not 3 minutes ago, and now here he is.
Yes, isn't it? But then, as you say, Hermione, all of my friends are peculiar.
Not half so peculiar as you. Digging in the cellar an hour before we leave for America, just look at yourself. And now that I think of it...
Yes, Hermione...
Oh, never mind. Go and let them in.
You were going to ask me something, Hermione, about the hole I'm digging in the cellar.
Oh, good heavens, stop rolling your eyes about that way. One would think you were digging a grave down there instead of a storage bin.
Yes, Hermione.
Oh, what's that?
I said, yes, Hermione.
Oh, bother, open the door! And stop saying yes, Hermione.
I think, my dear, I've said it for the last time.
For Suspense, Autolite is bringing you radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Jingle bells, jingle through the snow. Your car's all hep, it's full of pep, with Autolite, you know.
Right. And by Cornelius, electrical problems won't keep your car down when you stop at the shop. That features Autolite parts and service. Sure as Kris Kringle means Christmas, Autolite original factory parts and service top the town. So friends, stop in tomorrow at your friendly Autolite service station or the dealer who sells your make of car and ask for original factory parts and service.
Okay, Harlow. Right now, here's suspense.
And now Autolite brings you back to our show, a gripping tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Back for Christmas. Hermione was so positive that we would be back for Christmas. That last afternoon, pouring tea for a few friends who had come in to say last-minute farewells, she kept reiterating it.
Now, mind you, Hermione, don't let those Americans lure your husband with one of their fat university jobs. We absolutely must have you with us for Christmas.
He will be back, I promise you.
It's not absolutely certain,
now,
of course.
Herbert, what do you mean it's not certain? Of course it's certain.
After all, Herbert, old boy, you've contracted to lecture for only 3 months.
Oh, you're quite right, but then, of course, anything may happen.
Oh, Herbert adores being unpredictable. Now, what other man would decide the day, the very day, mind you, before leaving for America, to dig a great hole in the floor of the cellar?
In the cellar?
Yes. He's going to put some unclassified wild orchids down there. A devil's garden, if you please. Sounds mysterious. Well, that's Herbert, though. It's really quite simple, once you find out what he's up to. Now, take that telephone call he put through to you a few minutes before you arrived, Freddy.
To me?
Of course. Herbert wanted to surprise me about your plan to meet us in New York next month. Wasn't that why he called, to ask you not to mention it?
But, my dear Hermione, Herbert couldn't possibly have telephoned me in within the past hour. I've been walking in the park since 3.
He didn't telephone you?
How could he? As for my going to America...
Now, come, Freddy. You may as well own up. Hermione has found me out again.
But, Herbert, old chap, I really don't understand
what
you...
Oh, you see what a poor liar Herbert makes. He's as red as a beetroot.
Aren't you ashamed of yourself, Professor, stringing poor Hermione along like that? And as for you, Freddy, I'm furious you said nothing to us about going to America.
But look here, old girl. I've been trying to tell everyone here that I'm
Oh, stuff and nonsense. The game's gone on long enough. Besides, we must start getting ready. It was marvelous of you to come in to say goodbye. And don't worry about Herbert's little jokes. I will bring him back for Christmas. You may rely on it.
They all believed her. For years, she had been promising me for dinner parties, garden parties, committees, and the promises had always been kept. This time, they wouldn't be. I'd seen to that. The servants were gone for good. The farewells all said. I had time to the minute how long it would take to fill in the hole in the cellar, my devil's garden. Upstairs, in the bedroom, I undressed, folded my clothes over a chair, and put on my old bathrobe. Then I opened the door into Hermione's room.
Hermione, have you a moment to spare?
Of course, dear. I'm just finished.
No, then come in here for a moment. There's something rather extraordinary here.
Oh, good heavens, Herbert! What are you lounging about in that filthy old bathrobe for? I told you to put it in the furnace.
I'll do it today. Yes, I really will, I promise.
Well, high time. Now, what is it you want to show me?
It's in the bathroom here. Just look. Who in the world do you suppose dropped a gold chain down the bathtub drain?
I don't see anything.
Oh, here. I'll hold this flashlight for you. If you lean right over, you can see it shining deep down.
Oh, such a lot of nonsense. Just as... I don't see it, Herbert.
Oh, go on looking, Hermione. In just a moment...
Herbert, I absolutely refuse... Herbert, what are you doing? Take your hands off my neck!
You thought you were the only one who could plan things, didn't you, Hermione? Well, I've been making some plans of my own this week. In exactly 1 minute and 45 seconds, you'll be dead, Hermione. You see, I've planned it very accurately.
You'll never get away away with it!
No, but I will get away with it. You won't mind the smell of the leaf mold down in the cellar when I take you down there today. Yes, that's where you're going, Hermione, into my devil's garden that annoyed you so much. The soil is full of clay. It won't settle much. In a month or so, it won't even look dug up.
But my friends, they all expect me back for Christmas. If they don't hear from me, they'll wonder. And if I don't come back, they'll start asking questions.
No, they won't. Because you'll write them letters, Hermione, on the typewriter, as you always do. They'll be signed H in that neat, cryptic way you always sign the notes to your friends.
It won't work, Herbert. You were never any good at planning things.
But I've changed. I've learned from watching you all these years.
The lecture people in America, they'll be expecting you to be traveling with your wife.
I will be traveling with my wife, but not my present wife, Hermione. Fortunately, they've never met you. I'll write a few letters home for you, then fewer and fewer. Write letters signed with my own name, always expecting to get back, never quite able to. Keep the house 1 year, then another, they'll get used to it. I might even come back in a year or two and clear it up properly. Say you died in America. Nobody will ever suspect that you were lying under the floor of the cellar in this very house.
Herbert, it won't work, I tell you. The pit you dug in the cellar.
I can assure you, my dear Hermione, it will serve its purpose well.
No, Herbert!
Sorry, my dear. I've got to get this done on schedule. You have just 5 seconds to say your prayers.
Herbert, you must listen. The cellar, it don't...
The water, cut off at the main as I knew she would order it. She was so thorough. So was I. A clean blow at the base of the skull. Nothing to wash up. The electric current shut off at 1 o'clock, just as she ordered it. She thought of everything. So did I. My nice new electric lantern, plenty of light to work by in the cellar. The old bathrobe she wanted me to throw away came in handy now. If there should be any chance, bloodstain. Then, in the fire with it afterwards, the last evidence of my devil's garden. It was going well. Still an hour till I had to leave for the boat. The hole was almost filled. After that, it was easy. Put the finishing touches on the devil's garden, dress fast, get out of the house before 6:30, take the boat train to Southampton and board the ship for America. All according to plan. Hermione's plan. Oh, steward.
Yes, sir?
My wife is indisposed. She'll be taking her meals in our stateroom.
For the whole voyage?
Oh, yes, for the whole voyage.
I trust your wife is feeling better this morning, Professor Carpenter.
A little. Not yet well enough to leave her cabin.
I'm sorry. By the way, here's a copy of the radiogram you sent for your wife last evening.
Oh, thank you. I'll just check it over, but look here.
What is it? Did the typist make a mistake?
No, nothing important. She can correct it later. For a moment, I had a feeling that Hermione had been leaning over my shoulder again, correcting what I had written, as she always did. I had written a radiogram to Professor Goodenough and his wife. Haven't been out of my cabin the whole beastly trip. Herbert well. Doubt will be back for Christmas. However, the copy read, no doubt will be back for Christmas. Exactly what Hermione would have written. Well, the rest of the voyage was uneventful, and Marion and I met in New York just as we had planned. Just as we had planned. Professor and Mrs. Carpenter, we have reservations, I believe.
Yes, we've been expecting you, sir. Boy, take Professor and Miss Carpenter's luggage up to the suite. You know, Miss Carpenter, you're quite a surprise. Your letter reserving the rooms was so thorough. I was expecting an older, more forbidding sort of person, frankly, ma'am.
No, as a matter of fact, we are just married. But my letter reserving the rooms?
I wrote the letter, my dear, and signed it Mrs. Carpenter, just as a joke.
What a cunning old fox you are, Herbert.
Now that I think of it, I am rather.
Oh, I almost forgot. There's a letter for you, Miss Carpenter.
That's peculiar. I wonder who on earth...
Well, we shall find out in good time. Come along, my dear. We're keeping the boy waiting. Ha! Nothing like a cold, brisk shower to put a man to rights.
Herbert, this letter...
Oh, yes, the letter.
It seems to be a bill of some sort from a building contractor in Salisbury.
Well, let's see this bill or whatever it is.
It's very puzzling, Herbert. You were a widower, weren't you? I mean, Hermione isn't still alive.
Oh, good heavens, no! But let's have that. Dear madam, that's a good one. This is to acknowledge your order, together with the keys to your house in Launceston Place. Our men had no difficulty in finding the place where your husband had begun the excavation in the cellar. But apparently he changed his mind at the last moment and filled it in again.
What is it, Herbert?
Our men will begin digging tomorrow, and you may rest assured that it will be a professional job and will be completed in ample time for your surprise Christmas present to your husband. We are happy to be conspirators with you in this thoughtful gesture and hope that Professor Carpenter will be pleased at the results of our work that he so quaintly calls his Devil's Garden. Very truly yours, Paul Holt and Sons Contractors.
What does it mean, Herbert?
It means that Hermione was right. I will be back for Christmas. Back for Christmas. Back for Christmas! Back for Christmas! Back for Christmas!
This is the Autolite Suspense Show. Good night, Merry Christmas from Autolite.
Well, Santa, that was quite suspenseful. Why don't I go check on the pot roast while you see if you can find us another program? Maybe a comedy this time, or a romance.
Well, I'll try, but I can't promise anything. We do live at the North Pole, you know.
Don't I know it.
Max! Oh, Max!
Yes, Santa!
The missus and I want to listen to another program. Can you tell Rudolph to turn his antlers slowly to the right?
Oh, right, Ma. Come here, Rudolph. Turn. There. That's a boy.
The Kraft Foods Company presents The Great Gildersleeve. Great Gildersleeve is brought to you by the Kraft Foods Company, makers of parquet margarine. Millions of women all over America serve parquet because it tastes so good. Why, parquet tastes like it should cost twice as much.
To market, to get some parquet. Home again, try it.
K margarine made by Kraft. Well, let's see what's doing at the Great Gildersleeve's house this morning.
Deck the halls with boughs of holly, fa la 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 la.
Well, the great man seems as jolly as Santa himself, as he and his niece and nephew move the furniture around the parlor to make room for the Christmas tree.
Fa la 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 la. Leroy, give me a hand with this couch. I'll lift and you shove.
Okay, Unc.
I'll hold down the rug, Unky.
All right, Marjorie. Leroy, on the count of three, push. One, two. I thought you were going to push.
You never got to three.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, that's far enough anyway, Unky. It's more room than we had last year.
Well, we'll need more room. It's baby's first Christmas, so we're going to have a bigger tree than we've ever had.
Ooh, that'll be wonderful.
You bet. Her parents may not be around to provide these things, but by George, it's going to be a Christmas she'll remember.
At 9 months? I don't remember anything until I was 6 years old.
I could answer that, Leroy, but I feel too good this morning. Well, I better get going after that tree.
Hey, Unc, can I go along?
Sure, Leroy. We'll need lots of hands to get this tree home.
Oh, boy!
Well, if you get a larger tree, we'll need an extra string of lights.
Lights? Oh, yes. I'll pick them up at Peavy's when I go downtown.
Unky, can I invite Francine and the gang over when we light the tree? We'll have a party.
Yeah, and can I ask Piggy and Craig?
Now, children, this Christmas is going to be different. It's going to be just for our little family and Miss Fairchild.
Miss Fairchild?
Why, of course, Leroy. We're engaged, you know. She's almost a member of the family.
I think a little family party is a good idea. And Unky, when you get the tree, don't you forget to buy some mistletoe.
Mistletoe? Well, if you think it's a nice decoration around the house, I'll get some. Of course, it doesn't make any difference to me. Leroy, get your overshoes on and let's get going after that tree.
Okay.
See you later, Marjorie. Better say goodbye to the baby before I go.
Bertie's giving her a bath upstairs.
Yes, I know. Deck the halls with boughs of mistletoe. Fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la.
Hold still now, baby. Let Bertie wash your back.
Well, you seem to have your hands full, Bertie.
I sure have, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Hello, baby. Coochie-coo. Are you enjoying your bath this morning? Well, now, you're getting to be quite a splasher, aren't you? Oops. Right in my eye. I better get out of here before I get the bath. Bye-bye, baby. I'm on my way to get your first Christmas tree.
I saw some fine trees down at the corner market, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Well, thanks, Bertie. But Judge Hooker asked me to buy our Christmas tree from a friend of his, a young man he's helping to get started here in town.
Oh, well, that's nice of the judge. How many people are you going to have over this Christmas Eve, Mr. Gildersleeve? I'd like to know how many to fix for.
This year, Bertie, there'll be just the family and Miss Fairchild.
You mean none of your downtown friends are dropping in?
I'll ask them sometime during the holidays, but I'm not inviting any extra people for Christmas Eve.
I didn't think they needed much of an invitation.
No, Christmas Eve is going to be different this year, Bertie. Just our little family. Even Santa Claus won't get in unless he has a pass.
Gee, Unc, look at all the trees.
Yeah, the lot's full of them.
What color are we going to get this year? White? Blue, purple, or pink?
We're gonna get green. Leroy, it's a baby's first Christmas and we don't want to scare her. Now, where is the judge's friend?
Maybe that's him waiting on that lady.
Yeah, I guess so.
Hey, how about this tree, Unc? Hey, it's a whopper. How about it?
Well, our tree doesn't have to be that tall, Leroy. They charge by the foot, you know.
But Unc!
All right, let's see the price tag. $7? They must be charging per needle.
Too high, huh?
Well, after Christmas, we want to feel that we can afford to throw it away, Leroy. Come on, my boy. Let's get out of the tall timber.
Gosh, I want a big tree.
Well, leave it to me, Leroy. Now then, here's one that looks about right for our little parlor. Not as tall, but it's nice and chubby. Well filled out on top. How about it, Leroy?
Yeah, not bad, Unc.
Sure, this is the one for us. And the price is only... Whoa! Still, Leroy, when you stand back and look at it, maybe this isn't quite the tree for us.
What did the tag say?
$10. It's a prettier tree, though.
Well, did you find one that you liked?
Oh, are you Bob Clark?
Yes, I am.
Well, I'm Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, City Water Commissioner.
Yes, I know.
You do?
It's a pleasure to meet you, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you. This is my nephew, Leroy.
Hello, Leroy.
Hi.
Judge Hooker asked us to come down and have a look at your trees.
Well, that's a fine tree you're looking at. It's a silver tip.
Well, at $10, it must be silver-plated.
Well, like everything else, tree prices are a little high, I guess.
Let's take it, Hunk. What do you say, huh?
Well...
I think it's the pick of the lot, Mr. Gildersleeve. And the judge said you should have a tree like this.
Oh, the judge did he?
I think the judge is right, Hunk.
Oh, for goodness, gosh. Can't the judge let me pick out my own Christmas tree? What an old busybody.
Well, you see...
I'll take it. Here's your $10.
Oh, no. No, that's been taken care of, Mr. Gildersleeve.
It has?
Judge Hooker asked for the bill. He said to say Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Well, fine old fella the judge is.
Well, I certainly think so. It isn't everyone who'll do so much for a fellow as the judge has done for me.
Huh?
He's even found me a good job at the market starting the first of the year.
Well, that's the judge, all right. None better.
I'll help you carry the tree over to your car for you, Mr. Gildersleeve. And I'll help you tie it on.
Well, thank you, Bob. Well, he's a nice fella, isn't he, Leroy?
Yeah.
A nice thing the judge did, too. But he shouldn't have bought our tree. He's always so helpful around the holidays when he gets lonesome. Leroy, I told you and Marjorie that we weren't going to invite anybody over for Christmas Eve. But what do you say we make one exception and invite the judge?
Sure. He always brings swell presents.
Leroy, that's not the spirit. I wonder what he'll bring me. Hurry up, Floyd. I could shave myself faster than this.
What's the rush, Commish? Rome wasn't burned in a day.
I have things to do, Floyd. I want to get some lights for my Christmas tree before they're all gone.
Well, let me catch that stray whisker on your chin. There. You got a pretty nice tree, Commish?
You bet. And I can't wait to see the baby's eyes light up when she sees it. It's her first Christmas, you know.
Sort of like the kid, don't you, Commish?
Well, she'll do.
How long has it been since you found her in the back of your car?
Well, it's been about 3 months now, I guess. She's about 9 months old, Floyd.
Well, it's a great age. Funny, you never heard anything from the parents?
Well, it'd be all right with me if we don't. She's just like a member of our little family now.
Yeah, kids kind of get you, all right. Okay, Commish, that's all we can do for that face without plastic surgery.
Yes, yes.
You having open house this year, Commish?
No, Floyd. I decided Christmas Eve would just be for the family. You understand?
Oh, sure, yeah. Kind of hoped we'd get together and sing carols, but if you ain't having any outsiders in, I understand.
Well, I may as well tell you, Floyd, the judge is coming over.
Oh, the judge, huh?
Well, you see, I had to invite him. He gave us the tree.
Here you are, Mr. Gildersleeve. But you're through.
But Floyd, the judge paid $10 for that tree. I couldn't ignore that.
Of course, I'm just a hard-working barber, but we always got together in the past. But if you're throwing a party and just letting in the upper crust, $10 cover charge, I guess that lets me out.
Floyd, it isn't that at all.
It's okay.
Floyd, don't look so sad.
Well,
you know how it is with the judge. He never has any place to go Christmas Eve.
Well, the missus has a choir rehearsal at the church that night, and I don't have any place to go either. But that's okay. You don't find little Floyd Munson crashing in where he ain't wanted.
Oh, my goodness. Floyd, how would you like to drop by my house Christmas Eve?
Well, if you really want me.
Well, sure.
Okay, Commish, what time?
Gildersleeve, the trouble with you is you can't say no. Well, while I'm at it, I guess I should invite Peavy, Chief Gates. No, Peavy's mother-in-law's in town, and if he brought her out... No, sir, Peavy's out. I just won't say anything to Peavy and the Chief. Nothing at all. I'll invite them over New Year's to listen to the Rose Bowl game. Well, hello, Peavy.
Well, hello, Mr. Gildersleeve. What can I do you for this morning?
Peavy, I need a string of Christmas tree lights.
Oh? You must be going to have a Christmas tree.
Yes, Peavy. Leroy and I got a fine one this morning. Have you brought yours yet?
Well, we're not having a tree this year. We're having Miss Peavy's mother instead.
What?
We always have to forego a tree when Mother Higgins comes for the holidays. They make her sneeze.
Oh, well, that's too bad, Peavy. Well, let's see your lights.
Well, very well. They're over at this counter, Mr. Gildersleeve. Yes, I always like to be around a tree for a little while, come Christmas Eve. You going to have one, you say?
Well, yes, Peavy. Say, you have quite a collection of lights there. What type do you recommend?
Well,
how about these round ones?
They're rather nice if you like the round ones.
How about these pointed ones?
They're nice. They have their points.
Oh, brother. Oh, Peavy, here's something new. Bubble candles. Are they any good?
They bubble.
Peavy, you're quite a salesman. I just can't resist you. I'll take a string of the ones that bubble. The baby will like those, but I'd like to test them first.
Well, now you hold up the string and I'll plug them in there.
Well, look, Peavy, they bubble.
That's what I say.
Well, what's going on here?
Well, hello, Judge.
Hello, Judge.
Gentlemen. Why, that's a pretty sight, Gildy, with all those lights draped around you. You look like a great big fat Christmas tree.
Horace, I don't know how you can be such an old goat and such a nice guy at the same time. That was wonderful of you to buy that tree for their little family.
Oh, happy to do it, Gildy. And by the way, I saw Leroy and he extended me your kind invitation.
Shh, Judge. We'll discuss that later.
What's the matter, Gildy? Is it such a big secret that you've invited me over for Christmas Eve? Isn't everybody coming?
Would you gentlemen like me to step in the back room? Yep.
Peavy, we're having just a quiet family Christmas Eve. But the judge presented us with a tree and we appreciate it. So we invited him over. Well, how much are the lights?
How much? It's Christmas, Mr. Gildersleeve. I'd like to present you with these lights. Compliments of Peavy's Pharmacy.
Oh, goodness. Peavy, how'd you like to drop in for a little while Christmas Eve?
Are you sure I won't be one too many?
Oh, no. In fact, we might as well invite Chief Gates, too.
By the way, Gildy, I wonder if I could bring someone.
Judge, this is just a family party for the baby and the kids. And Adeline, of course, and you and Floyd and Peavy and the chief. Oh, well, bring him along. Who is it?
Well, if I may, I'd like to bring the young man you got the tree from.
You mean Bob, whatchamacallit?
Bob Clark. Splendid young man. Veteran, recently lost his wife. Has no friends in the community as yet, and it would be a nice gesture, Gildy, if you admitted him to your family circle on Christmas Eve.
Well, all right, Judge. I sort of like Bob. Bring him along. What the heck? It's Christmas.
Yes, yes. Well, Peavy, I suppose you would like to bring your mother-in-law, too.
Well, now, I wouldn't say that.
You know, Bertie, it'd be interesting to know how many of the people who use parquet margarine are listening to us tonight.
I wouldn't worry about that now. You can't listen to a flavor. You gotta taste it. The way I see it, soon as you take some parquet, spread it on a hot muffin or a slice of bread and taste it, from then on, that's the spread you're gonna want on everything. Rolls, pancakes, waffles, just everything.
Well, it's delicious, all right. Now, friends, in case you haven't tasted parquet, why not decide? Try it tomorrow. I'm sure you're going to like parquet's light, delicate flavor.
to market to get some parquet. Home again, try it today. You'll like it, you'll love it, like millions will say. Their favorite margarine, parquet.
So ask for parquet, the margarine made by Kraft that tastes like it should cost twice as much. Now let's get back to the great Gildersleeve. He planned to confine his Christmas Eve just to the family circle, but as usual, he has widened the circle to include all his friends. It's after dinner now, and the great Gildersleeve sits before the tree with baby Rosemary on his lap, enjoying a quiet hour before the guests arrive.
By George, there's no time like Christmas. It certainly is nice to have you with us, baby. You're cute. Well, I don't know how we ever got along without you. See all those presents under the tree? A lot of them are for you. There are some for Leroy, some for Marjorie and Bertie. But do you know what my Christmas present is this year? Yeah, that's right. You. Well, sir, baby, you're the biggest thing that's ever happened to me.
What's going on in here? A private party?
Well, no, Marjorie. We're waiting for you and Leroy. Where is he?
Hi, Unc. What's up?
It's time for a little family get-together, Leroy, before the guests arrive.
Unky, who's this Bob Clark the judge is bringing over?
He's a young fella looking to get started. He's a little old for you, Marjorie. Well, hand me the book, my dear. Time to read 'Twas the Night Before Christmas to you children.
Are you going to read that again, Unc?
Of course. Naturally, Leroy. I do it every year, remember?
Yeah.
My goodness, it's a tradition in this household, and we're going to observe it. Anyone who doesn't want to hear it can just leave.
Okay, I'll just go upstairs.
You will not. You'll stay right here and listen, and you'll enjoy it. Do you understand?
Sure.
Here's the book.
Thank you. You see, baby? That's a picture of Santa Claus. You sort of like chubby fellas, don't you? Well, there, are we all settled?
Yes, I am.
Leroy?
Sure. If you get stuck, let me know.
All right, my boy. Now, 'twas the night before Christmas and all through the house. Not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care.
Hey, I wonder if Bertie would lend me a pair.
Leroy, please. Well then, where were we? Oh yes, the stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down off a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight, Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night. Well, thank you, children. By George, that's a great poem.
I love it.
Yeah, not bad, Unc.
Oh, look, the baby's asleep. Better take her up to bed, Marjorie, and we'll bring her down when we light the tree.
All right, Unky. Come to Marjorie, baby.
Oh, here they come.
Well, don't open the door till I get her upstairs.
Coming.
Well, is this where St. Nicholas lives?
Come on in, Judge. It's nice to see you. Look at all those packages. And Bob. Well, I didn't see you there. Well, Merry Christmas, my boy.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Gildersleeve. It was awfully nice of you to invite me. And you're sure I won't be one too many?
No, the more the merrier. Besides, you can help me, Bob.
I can?
You bet. We need a tall young fellow to put the star on the top of the tree.
Well, fine.
Judge, you know where to hang your earmuffs. Take Bob's coat. And Bob, you come with me.
Sure thing, Mr. Gildersleeve. Oh, say, where do you want me to put this little present I brought for the baby?
Present for the baby? Aw, you shouldn't have done it. Oh, business is getting good. Excuse me, Bob. By George, this is the way to spend Christmas Eve.
Let's light the tree.
Yes, Commissioner. I have to go down and relieve the desk sergeant so he can go home and play Santa Claus.
Well, I'm sorry, Chief, but Adeline isn't here yet.
Hey, that's right.
By the way, Gildy, before everyone arrives, I'd like to have a word with you about Bob.
About Bob?
Yes, Gildy. The reason I'm so interested in this young man is...
Tell me later, Judge. That must be Adeline.
Hey, gang, it's Miss Fairchild. Let's everybody get under the mistletoe and see which one she smacks first.
Careful, Floyd, or you'll get a smack from me. Adeline, come in.
Why, I'm sorry I'm late, Throckmorton, but I wanted to get all prettied up for the party.
Well, don't be sorry about a thing. It's Christmas Eve. All together now.
Merry Christmas.
To you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Peavy. Gracious, what a reception.
Why, certainly, you're a very pretty young lady. Come on, Adeline, I want you to see the tree.
Care to stand over here by me, Miss Fairchild?
Thank you, Mr. Munson, but I see that mistletoe behind your ear.
Oh, she's on to you, Floyd.
I think I'll just sit over here by Mr. Peavy, where I'll be safe.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. Now, Peavy.
Oh, Throckmorton, I think the tree is beautiful.
Yep, Silvertip, it's pretty all right. Yeah, we have the old judge to thank for that.
Oh, come on, everybody. Let's have another song.
Okay, one chorus for Adeline. Come on, fellas. Deck the halls with boughs of holly, la 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 la. 'Tis the season to be jolly, la 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 la.
We know
God in our gay apparel, la 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 la. Jolly is the moonlight carol, la 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 la. We'll have to learn that sometime. Okay, let's light up the baby's tree now, huh?
Well, shall I get her for you, Uncle Mort?
No, Marjorie. I'd like to bring her down myself.
Well, I think Mr. Clark's up there with her now.
Bob? He is?
Uh-huh. He asked to see her, and she was awake anyway, so I thought it would be all right.
Oh, sure. Well, gather around the tree, everybody. I'll be right back.
Here's another batch of popcorn, folks.
Oh, boy! Come and get it.
Leroy, save some for me.
Gildy.
What is it now, Judge?
I wanted to talk to you about Bob.
Judge, you already talked to me. He's a fine young fella, and after the first of the year, I promised to trade Eddie's market. Now, are you satisfied?
Gildy.
Now, we better get back to the party before the popcorn's all gone. Just listen to the fun they're having down there. Gildersleeve, you're a mighty lucky man. Yes, sir, this is the best Christmas I've ever had. Well, Bob must have bought her a music box. I'll peek in and see how they're getting along.
Well, baby doll, I'm glad you like the music box.
Well, well, look at them in there.
I hope I can give you lots of presents as you grow older. That is if Mr. Gildersleeve will give you back to me.
Give her back?
I think he will. He's a swell fellow, baby doll. If I hadn't been sure of that, I would never have left you in his car. That sounds like a terrible thing to do, doesn't it? But after we lost your mother, well, I just didn't know what to do. All I could think of was to get you into a good home where you would be loved and cared for while I went away and tried to get straightened out. Well, when you get a little older, I'll try to explain it to you.
So that's what the judge was trying to tell me.
I hope Mr. Gildersleeve will see it our way. It'll pretty much be up to him whether or not you come home to your dad. And, well, I can make a better home for you now. And your grandmother's coming. You'll like her.
My little baby. He can't take her away from me. Why did he have to come back here?
Are you ready, Unky? We're waiting.
Gildy, where are you going?
I'm going for a walk.
Gildy, wait for me! So, after the most thorough investigation of Bob and the circumstances surrounding the case, bringing you together seemed to be the only thing to do. Well, the hard part, of course, was trying to tell you. I'm sorry, Gildy,
You've been very considerate, Horace, of all of us.
Now it's up to you to decide what you want to do about it.
I know, Horace. I know.
You could put up a fight for her.
Let's go back in the house before we both catch pneumonia. I know what I'm going to do.
Hey, Hunk, where have you been?
I needed some air, Leroy.
Well, hurry, Unky. Bertie is going to sing a lullaby.
Oh? Well, fine.
Mr. Gildersleeve?
Oh, what is it, Bob?
Wouldn't you like to hold the baby?
Why, yes, Bob. I think I would. Thank you.
Beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Yes, very wonderful. Well, let's light the tree, huh?
Yeah, what are we waiting for?
One moment, everyone, please. Please. Before we light the tree, there's something I wanted to say. All of us wanted to make sure our little baby had a wonderful first Christmas. Well, it's turned out to be more wonderful than any I even anticipated. The baby's father has joined us on this Christmas Eve, and he's a fine young man. And I know he'll provide a good home for the baby. Here you are, Bob, your little daughter.
Thank you, Mr. Gildersleeve. Thank you for everything.
Oh, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Now, Bertie, it isn't as though we won't be seeing her. She'll be right here in town. Well, what's everyone so quiet about? This is a very happy Christmas for all of us. A father and his daughter have just been reunited. Let's light the tree and sing our carol.
Anything you say, Commissioner.
Gildy, this is a big thing you've done tonight.
Oh, well, Unky, I'm so proud of you.
No, my dear.
Gosh, I'm gonna miss the little kid.
Leroy, stay close to me.
Joy to the world, the Lord is come.
Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Merry Christmas, and God bless you.
Gotta get back to the workshop. I'll just go get Rudolph.
No, no, Max. Just one more show.
Dear, maybe you'd better let Max get back. It's quite a storm out there.
Oh, nonsense.
But this is a Santa. It's Rudolph. He's frozen. He's a solid block of ice. I'm not sending him up there again.
But Max...
Sorry, this is a Santa, but an elf's gotta do what an elf's gotta do. Come on in by the fire, Rudolph.
Listen, there's another show starting.
But how can that be? We can't pick up anything here without some sort of antenna.
It's a miracle.
A miracle?
Yes, a Christmas miracle. And I think it's just what we need right now.
Cornet Little Show, presenting fact and fiction, dramatized by the Cornet Storyteller. Today, we're going back to a Christmas Eve in the 19th century. O. Henry's story of the true Christmas spirit of love and sacrifice, the gift of the Magi, will be brought to you in just a moment by the Cornet Storyteller.
$1.87. That was all. And 60 cents of it was in pennies. Pennies saved one and two at a time. Della counted it for the third time.
$1.83. $1.84. $1.85. $1.86. $1.87.
It was still the same. And the next day would be Christmas. $1.87 with which to buy a present for Jim. Her Jim. There was clearly nothing to do but flop down on the shabby little couch and howl. So Della did it. While Della's sniffles are gradually subsiding, take a look at the vestibule below, where you will see on the letterbox a card bearing the name Mr. James Dillingham Young. The Dillingham had been flung to the breeze during a former period of prosperity when its possessor was being paid $30 per week. Now, when the income was shrunk to $20, the letters of Dillingham looked blurred, as though they were thinking seriously of contracting to a modest and unassuming D. But whenever Mr. James Dillingham Young came home and reached his flat above, he was called Jim, and greatly hugged by Mrs. James Dillingham Young. That's Della. She has now finished her cry and is looking into the pier glass, attending to her cheeks with the powder rag. Suddenly,
oh!
As she stands before the glass, she pulls down her hair and lets it fall to its full length. Now, there were two possessions of the James Dillingham Youngs in which they both took a mighty pride. One was Jim's gold watch that had been his father's and his grandfather's. The other was Della's hair, which now ripples about her, shining like a cascade of brown waters and reaching below her knee. Her eyes are brilliant, but her face has lost its color. Nervously and quickly, she does her hair up again, slips into her old brown jacket, puts on her old brown hat, and in the twinkling of an eye, she is halfway down the stairs and out on the street. Della has a determined, almost desperate look as she sights a sign reading, Madame Sofroni, hair goods of all kinds. Della rushes, panting, up the stairs and plumb into the portly figure of Madame Sofroni.
Oof! Will you buy my hair?
I buy hair. Take your hat off. Let's have a sight at the looks of it.
Down ripples the brown cascade.
$20.
All right. Only quickly, please.
In a few moments, the implacable Madame Sofroni and her scissors have done the job. And Della, minus her hair, but richer by $20, flees from the store into the street again. This time, she's looking for a different store, a store in which to buy, not to sell. At the jewelry counter, as she longingly handles a platinum chain, she hesitantly asks,
"You did say $21, didn't you?" Yes, that's what I thought.
This is it. This is the present just made for Jim and no one else. Though there's no other like it in any of the stores. She knows, for she has turned all of them inside out. It's a platinum fob chain, simple and chaste in design. Della has made her mind up.
I'll take it.
With the chain wrapped in a holiday box and clutched in her eager hand, Della finds herself again out on the street. But this time, she is in such a rosy glow, she hardly notices the other last-minute shoppers hurrying by. The street trio playing Christmas carols. The old gentleman who tries to sell her a holly wreath. It seems but seconds until she is back in the little furnished flat again. There's a sudden shock as the pier glass confronts her, this time accusingly. Now comes the moment of reckoning as she gazes with dismay at the short ends of her hair. The rosy glow gives way to prudence and reason. Out comes the curling iron, on with the gas jet, as she sets to work repairing the ravages made by generosity and love. In 40 minutes she finishes, with the last curl lying tiny and close to her head, making her look wonderfully like a truant schoolboy. But to Della, gazing critically at herself in the pier glass, the result is anything but wonderful.
If Jim doesn't kill me first, he'll say I look like a Coney Island chorus girl.
But no more time for reflections. It's nearly 7, and Jim is never late. She sits nervously, waiting for Jim.
He's here. Please, God, make him not mind my hair so much. Make him think I'm still pretty.
Jim steps in. He has a smile of welcome on his face as he glances around the room for Della. But the smile freezes on his lips as he suddenly sees her sitting on the corner of the table. An expression comes into his eyes as immovable as a setter dog at the scent of quail. The expression terrifies Della, who is expecting anger, surprise, disapproval, or even horror, but not this look of... Della wriggles off the table and goes to him.
Jim, darling, don't look at me that way. I had my hair cut off and sold because I couldn't have lived through Christmas without giving you a present. It'll grow out again. You won't mind, will you? I just had to do it. My hair grows awfully fast. Say Merry Christmas, Jim, and let's be happy. And wait till you see the beautiful gift I got for you.
Della rattled on like that, but after she was all through, all Jim could ask laboriously was...
You've cut off your hair!
Della tried again, this time more patiently.
Sold, I tell you. Sold and gone, too. And it went for you, Jim. Maybe the hairs of my head were numbered, but nobody could ever count my love for you. Now, shall we have supper?
At last, Jim seems to wake out of his trance. He enfolds Della in his arms, and then he carefully draws a package from his overcoat pocket and throws it on the table. Nimble fingers quickly tear open the string and paper, and then...
Oh, Jim, they're beautiful! How did you know? They're what I've always want... No. My hair! My hair! Oh, Jim, how can I wear them?
There they lay, the combs, the set Della had worshipped for so long in an exclusive shop window. Pure tortoise shell, with jeweled rims, just the shade to wear in the beautiful and vanished hair. They were expensive combs, Della knew, and her heart had craved and yearned over them without the least hope of possession. And now Della hugs them to her and looks up at Jim with dim eyes and a smile.
My hair grows so fast, Jim.
Then Della puts the combs down carefully, lovingly, and even more radiantly prepares to show Jim his gift. She holds it out to him eagerly on outstretched palm. The dull, precious metal gleams and glows, entirely satisfied with its own value.
Isn't it a beauty, Jim? You'll have to look at the time every 15 minutes now. Give me your watch. I want to see how it looks with the chain.
For answer, Jim sits down suddenly on the couch.
Della, let's put our Christmas presents away and keep them a while. I sold the watch to get money to buy your combs. And now, how about supper?
The Magi, as you know, were wise men who brought gifts to the babe in the manger. They invented the art of giving Christmas presents. Being wise, their gifts were no doubt wise ones, possibly bearing the privilege of exchange in case of duplication. And here I have lamely related to you the uneventful chronicle of two foolish children in a flat who most unwisely sacrificed for each other the greatest treasures of their house. But in a last word to the wise of these days, let it be said that of all who give gifts, these two were the wisest. Of all who give and receive gifts, these foolish ones were the wisest. They are the Magi.
You've just heard O. Henry's Gift of the Magi, which was brought to you by your Coronet Storyteller. Be sure to join us next week, same time, same station, for another story from the pages of Coronet Magazine.
Well,
Well, Santa, it's back to work for you. You should be in the Christmas spirit now.
I suppose, but I wonder, do people really care about Christmas anymore? Is there any Christmas spirit left in the world?
I believe there is.
I do too, Santa.
Me too, Santa. In fact, I bet everyone in Radioland has the true Christmas spirit. Come on, folks. Let's all let Santa know we have the true Christmas spirit. On the count of three, everyone in Radioland wish Santa a Merry Christmas. One, two, three.
Merry Christmas!
Thank you and good night. This has been an OTARP radio production. Back for Christmas originally aired on Suspense on CBS on December 24th, 1948. The Great Gildersleeve Christmas Show originally aired on NBC on December 22nd, 1948. And The Gift of the Magi originally aired on the Coronet Little Show on December 19th, 1943. This has been a production of the On the Air Radio Players and is sponsored by the Henrico County Division of Recreation and Parks. The voices for tonight's show are James Nygrund, Alex Martin, Harry Caulfield, Vaughn Gary, Dan Summy, Dan Gerstenlauer, Sandra Clayton, Christina Day, Marcia Mosley, J. Mark Scott, Jim Dyke, Emma Browning, Karen Charlotte, and me, Jim Noonan. Special thanks to the Parquet Butter Babes. Sound effects by Aaron Perry, music by Logan Byam. Sound booth operator and technical editor was Devin Langston. The production manager was Lauren Whitley, and the show was directed by Art Trotter. For more information about all upcoming shows and auditions, visit our website at www.otarp.com.